From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a closer look at stories from our radio newsrooms across the country. Today, On Deadline is looking at the Supreme Court and recent calls for Justice Samuel Alito to recuse himself from certain cases after it was discovered that flags associated with Donald Trump's so-called Stop the Steal movement were flown over his property. That was in January 2021. The same month that rioters at the Capitol attempted to stop the certification of votes for current President Joe Biden. While the upside-down flag usually signals distress, it was used by those protesting Trump's loss in the 2020 election and became a major symbol for his unfounded claims that the election was stolen. That movement led to those rioters storming the Capitol on January 6, 2021. Then, in 2023, Alito flew an Appeal to Heaven flag. It was first used in the Revolutionary War, but has more recently been used by conservatives calling for a biblical-centered government. We'll also note here that Alito penned the majority opinion in the Dobbs v. Jackson case that overturned Roe v. Wade. The Appeal to Heaven flag also made appearances among the mob members who stormed the Capitol on January 6th, battering the building and America's sense of trust in the foundations of its democracy. As one would imagine, Alito's flags have ruffled feathers as the Supreme Court gets ready to hear cases related to the 2020 election. In a letter sent to Chief Justice John Roberts, House Democrats asked how the court planned to enforce its code of conduct, arguing that Alito had violated a provision that bars justices from endorsing a candidate for office and another that requires recusal when their impartiality might be reasonably questioned. In response, Alito has said that he will not step back from the cases. He blamed his wife for the flags and said that she had every, quote, legal right to use the property as she sees fit. Richard Painter, a professor of law at the University of Minnesota Law School and the former White House Ethics Counsel in the George W. Bush administration, joined Odyssey to discuss the situation.
I don't see why Justice Alito's wife would fly a flag upside down in the heat of the contested election of 2020, when there was going to be a serious investigation of the criminal investigation of what happened in the January 6th insurrection. I don't understand why Justice Alito's wife would hang a flag upside down outside his home. There are different accounts from his neighbors about what happened, but it's really quite shocking to me, and shocking that she would do that without his permission. It is a home that they both share, and I think that Mrs. Alito would be well aware that hanging a flag upside down that way in the middle of a contested election would be viewed as a political statement and could lead to calls for Justice Alito to recuse from the cases involving that election.
So all of that being said, the suspicions about the story, Alito also in the letter denies any knowledge of the symbolism of the two flags that were flown, the upside down flag and the look to God or look to the heavens flag, both of which have been associated over the last couple of years with Trump and MAGA movement and were flown on January 6th. So he says he knows nothing about any of that. All of that, considering all of it, is there anything that really anybody can do about it? Is the Supreme Court justice ultimately answerable to anybody short of a congressional impeachment?
Well, I should emphasize that I'm more concerned about the upside-down American flag. That's a distress signal. The other flags are flags from the Revolutionary War era, which were appropriated by the January 6th rioters. But those are flags, historical flags that have been around for quite a while. But the upside-down American flag is a distress signal. It's almost never flown by anyone unless it's an anti-American protest or in a serious situation of distress. So I'm very concerned to have that upside-down American flag outside a Supreme Court justice's home. And I'm shocked once again that he didn't know about it when it happened, if that's the story. At this point, we found that Justice Thomas has refused to recuse from cases involving the January 6th insurrection, even though his wife was very much involved in the attempt to overturn the result of the election. And one of those cases involved subpoenas directed at the White House for communications that may have very well have come between Mark Meadows and Mrs. Thomas. Justice Thomas refused to recuse from all those cases. That is a very, very compelling case for recusal. I believe Justice Alito now, in these circumstances, should also recuse. But if Justice Thomas hasn't been forced to recuse from the January 6th cases. In an even more compelling case for recusal, I just don't see that this court is going to be accountable to anybody. And Congress needs to seriously consider ethics legislation for the court, including installing an inspector general at the Supreme Court of the United States.
This isn't the first time that a Supreme Court justice has raised eyebrows through conduct that could be considered unethical. In fact, the code of conduct referenced in that letter from House Democrats was put in place after Justice Clarence Thomas was criticized for the acceptance of numerous vacations, gifts, and tuition payments from a conservative donor. The House Democrats referenced it in their appeal to try to force Alito's recusal, writing that, "Adopting a code of ethics and failing to enforce it only serves to reinforce the perception that the Supreme Court justices operate without consequences for clearly unethical behavior." To dive in deeper, KCBS political analyst Mark Sandilow joined Odyssey.
Mark, how is it reasonable for him to say he had nothing to do with items on his own property?
Judge Alito, I mean, what he says is his wife did it, and doesn't even mention her name, which is Martha Ann. But he says my wife did it. This is sort of the remarkable irony in this. I mean, there's some questionable. She got in a fight with people in their neighborhood. Apparently, they used the F word on a sign about Donald Trump. And then after January 6th, she hung this flag up upside down. He said the moment he saw it, he told her to take it down. She said no and stayed up there for a few days. Here's a part that I find sort of most delicious in its irony, though. Remember, this is Judge Alito who wrote the Dobbs decision, which overturned Roe v. Wade. It overturned a woman's reproductive rights. He writes in a letter that he sent to the Senate Judiciary Committee yesterday saying he was not going to recuse himself. He was not going to step away from any Supreme Court decisions having to do with January 6th. He writes, "My wife is a private citizen. She possesses the same First Amendment rights as every other American." Here's the part. "She makes her own decisions, and I have always respected her right to do so." So essentially, choice when it comes to flying a flag is something that his wife possesses.
Do you think this is going to renew calls or maybe a more controversial code of ethics to be adopted?
No question. I mean, the calls have been there, and the question is, will they do something? That's a little bit harder to say. The code of ethics, it's up to an individual judge on the Supreme Court to decide whether they have a conflict of interest. And what the standard says is, if you have a conflict of interest, of course, you recuse yourself. But it also says, if a reasonable person might perceive you to have a conflict of interest, then you should also not do so. Now, you can definitely make an argument that, you know, that this is not his doing. This is a flag, an upside down American flag that flew over his house. Who knows whether or not that was in sympathy with the election deniers, whether that was in sympathy with the January 6th folks. I mean, I suppose you could debate that. But the idea that he gets to decide this himself. So what Dick Durbin, who's the senator from Illinois, who's the Democratic chair of the House of the Senate Judiciary Committee, has said is there needs to be this code of ethics, what you just mentioned. There need to be rules about this. So it's not up to Alito to decide. It would be up to, you know, either a panel of judges or be up to Supreme Court Justice, you know, Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts. But boy, there have been so many questions between Alito having trips with rich donors, Clarence Thomas doing the same, Clarence Thomas's wife having texted President Trump during the January 6th insurrection. Yep. You know, all of this suggests that there's going to be outrage if the court sides with the protesters.
Is it common for elected officials, judges, other big figures to claim they completely separate themselves from their spouses' actions?
Well, you know, part of this, and this gets confused, Margie, it never used to be the case, but that's because these big name people used to all be men and their wives were always in the background. That's changed. You know, that's changed as more women are, I mean, but certainly you hear all the time, I mean, places like the Bay Area where we've had these very powerful female politicians. And, you know, Dianne Feinstein for years insisted that her husband, Richard Blum's investments have nothing to do with her. You know, Nancy Pelosi says the same about her husband's investments. And on a certain, you know, on a certain level, you have to accept the fact that marriages are partnerships. They have separate rules. On the other hand, even my wife, for years, has understood that she can't or she shouldn't give money to politicians, because as somebody who, at least for years, tried to stay as objective as possible, you don't want even somebody's wife to be associated with a political campaign. Obviously, the rules are different in the Alito House.
The Supreme Court recently handed down three decisions as it works to clear the docket of about 30 cases. Those three cases aren't directly Trump-related, but they shouldn't be overlooked. Among them were cases involving free speech, national banks, and the death penalty. For more on the recently released decisions, Rory Little, a legal expert and professor at UC College of the Law, San Francisco, joined Odyssey.
So one of the decisions involves the NRA. Can you break down the free speech claims?
Yeah, so that's a case. And by the way, they did decide three cases. They still have something like 30 left to do. They normally finish by the end of June. So they're going to be issuing a lot of opinions with increasing public attention over the next 4 weeks. This case, the NRA versus Volo, a state official who regulates the insurance industry in New York, basically said to insurance companies, we will do business with you if you cut your ties with the NRA, and we're not going to enjoy doing business with you if you don't cut your ties. And the Supreme Court today unanimously, Justice Sotomayor, who's a liberal justice writing, said that state's a First Amendment problem. That's a First Amendment issue. State officials can't punish people for their sort of free speech advocacy of various views, even if they don't like, for example, the NRA and they favor gun control. They can say they favor gun control, but they can't punish people, you know, in a business sense. So that's an important First Amendment case. It's a gun case, since the NRA is one of the parties. But of course, there's still another big gun case yet to be decided, which is whether you can prohibit people with domestic violence restraining orders from owning guns. And that case will be a big news case when it comes out.
Yeah, absolutely. Justice Sotomayor apparently also faulting the majority in her opinion on the death penalty case. What's that issue?
Well, that's a case out of Arizona, and it's a pretty horrible case. Death penalty cases usually are somebody who committed multiple homicides. The Arizona state court system sentenced this guy to death after a trial. The Ninth Circuit kind of repeatedly tried to reverse that on a habeas action, saying that the lower courts hadn't followed the law correctly, that ineffective assistance of counsel was a big issue. And here, the Supreme Court, 6-3, Justice Alito, writing for the majority, reverses the Ninth Circuit and basically says you have to affirm this death penalty case. Justice Sotomayor and Justice Jackson are both dissenting, saying, wow, that's pretty unusual for the Supreme Court to actually tell some lower court how they have to decide a case. And so there's a vigorous dissent in that case. Not surprising that the Supreme Court reversed the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit is viewed as just far too liberal on death penalty cases.
And what's the significance of this case relating to regulating national banks?
You know, that's a case that's not going to get much public attention, but it's a really important case. It's a preemption issue. Does a New York state law interfere with the administration of federal law in the banking industry? And really, nobody's going to care much about that except bankers. But it's really relevant to the Texas events that are happening these days, where Texas has passed some state laws saying we're going to block immigrants from coming across the border. We're going to put up barbed wire in the middle of the river. We're going to do all these things. And the federal authorities have said, wait, you can't do that. You're interfering with the administration of federal law. This case today, which is called Quintero versus Bank of America, is going to be very relevant to how the courts handle those Texas things, which we've been reading about in the newspaper.
And that presidential immunity question, are we expecting that to be at the end?
Absolutely. I would bet it was the last argued case for the term, and I would imagine it would be the last cited case. Of course, it depends. They announced their opinions in order of seniority. So I assume the Chief Justice will write that one. So he will get to be the last one to announce an opinion. But if a lower seniority justice were to write that opinion, then in fact, you might hear it before some of the other cases. But the Chief Justice, I think, will have that case. And my guess is he'll announce it at the very end.
One of the cases the Supreme Court justices have yet to clear before July is Trump's immunity appeal. This case stems from special counsel Jack Smith's charges that Trump tried to overturn a Democratic election. Trump has argued that without immunity, presidents would be hamstrung in office, always fearful of politically motivated prosecutions. CNN noted that position appeared to gather strength among the conservative Supreme Court during oral arguments in April. Three of those conservative-leaning justices were appointed by Trump himself. Still, it didn't appear that Trump would be able to get Smith's case tossed entirely. The Associated Press wrote that several conservative justices indicated they might have to send the case back to lower courts before any trial could begin, which means it wouldn't play out before the November election. That breaks with tradition. The court has moved very quickly in prior cases involving presidents. It decided the Watergate tapes case against President Richard Nixon in just 16 days. Earlier this year, it took the justices less than a month to rule unanimously that states couldn't kick Trump off the ballot. The Trump immunity case, though, is one that many observers expect to take a while. Justice Alito said this about it: "Whatever we decide is going to apply to all future presidents." Now, whether you agree or not with his wife's right to an upside-down flag, there's no disputing the fact of that statement. Whatever the court decides for Trump applies to everybody who follows him. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strauser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.